This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Before we get underway, hey, thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's better parts, better prices every single day. I cannot believe it. Opening day. It's time to talk some baseball. Opening day is just around the corner. We are ready to go around the horn, and we're going to talk about the next evolution of baseball thinking and do a book review. First time on the show, Russell Carlton. He is a baseball writer. He has just produced his book. It is titled The Shift, The Next Evolution in Baseball Thinking, and he is with us tonight. He has certainly done it all and provided a lot of statistical information for a number of Major League Baseball teams. First time on the program. Welcome, Russell.
Thanks.
It is good to have you on the show. I know you've got to be fired up. Major League Baseball 2018, the season is just around the corner. What are you looking forward to the most? And I just have to say, before we get underway, we are based here in Houston, so we're feeling pretty darn good, Mr. Russell.
Well, now you have to do the hardest thing in sports, which is to repeat the championship.
Okay, so. No pressure. We love pressure. Bring it on. That's not a problem.
No, I mean, opening day, of course, I joking, I refer to it as the holiest day of the year, and well, maybe not even not so joking, but you know, this is going to be fun because you know baseball is going through a lot of changes, kind of on and off the field, and it's going to be interesting to see how some of the new wrinkles that are going to be out there in the game are going to be playing out from there. And plus, it's just you know, I mean, it is a game that I have been in love with since I was about 6 years old. So. It's always wonderful to sit down and crack open a new season.
Absolutely. Well, here we are, 2018. Yeah, as I said, we are in Houston. The Astros are world champs. Can they do it? I mean, I got to ask him, do you think, what is your belief? Do you think that they can repeat as world champions?
Well, I mean, it's not like they lost a whole lot. I mean,
they sure did.
that's a really, really good team. Uh-huh. You have a full season for Lander. You've got all the moving parts for their last year. Altuve signed an extension, so he's locked down for a long time. You know, that's a team that has built things up and has built a really good core.
Hey, our MLB news and notes and book review will continue with baseball writer Russell Carlton after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Right now we're going to rejoin baseball writer and author. He has just released his new book. It is titled The Shift, The Next Evolution in Baseball Thinking. And that is Russell Carlton. You know, Russell, you've been a baseball fan for a very long time, as you had just said. What were your thoughts on the outside looking in, just how the Astros went about, you know, rebuilding this team, this franchise, and you know, just every single year they continued to improve and became strong and steady, and now it looks sustainable.
Yeah, and I mean, this is you know, if you kind of look back at it, you didn't see the moves as they were happening.
Right.
But, you know, something... But, you know, you kind of look back and you see a pattern. And you even see places where, you know, they goofed a little bit. You know, they drafted Mark Appel instead of Chris Bryant. And, you know, you kind of look back and you kind of go, well, this team could have had Chris Bryant on it, too. So, you know, there's that part of it. But, you know, the Astros have followed a process there. If you take, you know, a little bit of the time, sometimes stuff falls into your lap. But even something like Charlie Morton last year, who they signed, and they said, you know, we think we could get more out of this guy than he has given, and so we're going to get into your contract and work with him and say, okay, maybe we change your pitch mix a little bit, you'd be a little more effective. And it worked. And so that ability to not only find value when it's kind of right out there staring at you, but to find a little bits of value here and there in places where you weren't expecting it. That's what the Astros have done.
Mm-hmm. And were you expecting that Verlander deal to go down in late month of August? Or
was that just crazy? I was as shocked as everybody.
I know it. It's worked out.
I mean, there was There was talk, oh, Detroit might move him. They might move him. And then all of a sudden it happened. You're like, really, they moved him? Because, mm-hmm. you know, he seemed like he was just kind of Mr. Detroit. But, well, now he can be Mr. Houston.
Yeah. Hey, you're listening to the voice, Russell A. Carlton. He is a baseball writer, researcher, and a long time. He is a life fan of baseball. And I've got down here that you live in Atlanta. And, you know, as a journalist, as sports journalists, we are never, they teach us this in school, you're never supposed to assume. But I'm going to assume that you are a Braves fan. And if so, come on, Russell, talk to me. I mean, what's the forecast in 2018? And what kind of movement took place in the offseason for the Braves?
See, I grew up in Cleveland, so I'm an Indians fan who happens to be living in exile. But with the Braves, of course, I follow them when I weigh out the best I can.
Okay.
And it's easy around here. I mean, the Braves are kind of in a consolidating year where they have a number of prospects that are kind of on those first couple of steps. They have, you know, what has been described as oodles of pitching, and the idea being that, you know, eventually, hopefully three or four of those guys are going to poke their way up and come up with average and maybe even more special major league pitchers. Ronald Acuna is coming up soon, we hope. And then, you know, Dansby Swanson, who was supposed to be Rookie of the Year at the beginning of last year and kind of took a step back, maybe he finally finds his way. So, I mean, it's a kind of year where you go, okay, well, they're in that first stage of the rebuild. So hopefully they have something to show for it at the end of the year.
Well, Russell, as you had just said, you're a Midwest boy. You're from Ohio. So, you know, what's it like being in Atlanta? I mean, what are Brave fans like? Are they willing to be patient and let this process, you know, work itself out?
It has been kind of trying because they've lost 90 games the past couple of years. And, you know, when I was growing up, the Indians went through a phase in the late 80s where they were losing 90 games a year.
Gosh.
And then all of a sudden in the mid-90s, they had those amazing teams that went on that 5-6 year run where they were in the playoffs every year.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, beating the ball as much as they could. And so, I mean, I remember that it's really hard to go through those losing times, and it feels like, oh, this is never going to get better. And then eventually it does. So, I mean, I think that there's probably some very grumbled things that are being said out there. And I've heard them too, and I kind of see where that's going, and I hope that, you know, for the purposes of my girls are growing up to be Braves fans, and hopefully they can have a childhood where they were cheering.
Okay, so you're not going to make them cross over. I mean, you got to give some love for the Indians before we transition and highlight your book. Come on.
A couple of years ago when the Indians were in the World Series against the Cubs, and I also lived in Chicago for a couple of years. My daughter broke my heart when she said, I'm cheering for the Cubs. I'm like, you know where Daddy's from, right?
Right.
And she said, yeah, but I want the Cubs. And I'm like, come on, don't do that to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's kind of an eclectic family that way, and that, you know, I'm from Cleveland and my girls are growing up Braves fans, but, you know, that's all right. The Braves have some cool people that are working for them, and that's a good thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Hey, baseball writer Russell Carlton with us for the very first time at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. You can connect with us online at Twitter at E Radio Sports. Russell, before we open up your book and share with all the listeners, they need to go out and get a copy of this. Where can they connect with you? Where can they find you? Where can our listeners find you, Russell?
Well, if you want to do on Twitter, I am Pizza Cutter 4.
Pizza Cutter. How clever.
Which was my DJ name in college, yes.
Uh-huh.
It's a bit of a story. And I'm also at Baseball Prospectus every week. I write a weekly column for them. So you can go to baseballprospectus.com and see my work there. And otherwise, I don't know, smoke signals, carrier pigeons, I'm okay. Yeah.
You do it all. Okay, so let's transition and let's highlight your new book. It is titled The Shift, The Next Evolution in Baseball Thinking. And first of all, where'd you get the idea to do this? And I understand that, I mean, you like compressed, you put this together like and executed very, very quickly. How long did it take to produce?
Well, I mean, some of the stuff I've been writing at Baseball Prospectus for a number of years, so you know, it wasn't something that I was like, okay, I have nothing, I'm going to sit down and write a chapter. I had some stuff that I had written in the past that I was able to draw from. So in some sense, you know, it took me, about 6 months to write a first draft. But in another sense, it's taken me 10 years. And in fact, I had once tried to write this in 2008, and I found some of those old drafts, and I read them, and I'm like, oh, these are terrible. It's a project that I kind of bandied about in my head for a while, and then after the 2016 World Series happened, I was sad because the Indians had lost. And I said, well, what can I do? It's the off season. What should I do? I said, you know what? I'm finally going to pull that book thing off the shelf. And so I did, and I pulled some stuff together. I sketched out some chapters. And then it was just, you know, it finally worked for me. It finally clicked, and I was happy with the material that was coming out of it. So I was, what can I say? I was happy to be able to do that, and then it came together and found a publisher.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of feedback have you received?
It's been incredibly positive and humblingly so. I've gotten people who have, you know, even people saying, oh, I can't wait to read this, or mm-hmm. I read it and it was amazing. And I've had some people who don't want to be named who have contacted me, said, oh, yeah, we read your book, and it's really good. And that's always really cool when you get somebody who kind of reaches out to you and says, oh, this was a good read, or I learned a lot, or something like that. And that's what I'm going for. I just hope people take a look at it and read it and go, oh, you know, I learned something about baseball that I hadn't thought of before.
And for all of our baseball fans, hey, you know, if you want to know how to build the perfect team, even if you don't have the perfect players, I mean, like, you've got the answer to those questions, don't you, Russell?
I have some of the answers. don't do that to me. I say, you know, my secret weapon, or my secret superpower, is that I'm actually trained as a clinical psychologist.
And okay.
I talk about how, you know, I have some answers, I have observations, and hopefully I can think alongside somebody. But with, you know, the perfect team and something, I wrote a chapter on that, and I said, I want to talk about the perfect team, how people usually play it, which is, instead of saying, okay, well, you know, who are like the 9 best players at each position in baseball, I'm instead going to talk about how is it that the way that players work together can provide value. Because we don't really have a word for that in baseball. You know, we talk about, you know, so-and-so hit 40 home runs, and we assume it was just all him. Well, in what ways do players work together on a roster to build value? You know, a guy who gives up a lot of ground, or a pitcher who gets a lot of ground balls, is going to look a lot better in front of a Gold Glove defense on the infield versus a couple of guys who got lead shoes on. And so, you know, how do we, but he's not doing anything differently, but he's getting better results. So how do we chop that up? And so in the chapter, I said, instead of the perfect team, I used the -perfect-team.
Right.
And that it's a way of saying, you know, this is something a little bit different than just kind of pick the all-star team.
Hey, it is a fascinating read. Go out and get a copy of it. It has just been released, The Shift, The Next Evolution in Baseball Thinking. We are talking to the uber-talented, that is Dr. Russell Carlton, baseball writer, author. He's lived everywhere, Midwest, and now he's a Southern boy. So we look forward to another conversation. Russell, you're a great guy. We've got to have you back, okay? A lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Hey, stick around. Much more coming your way in hour number 2 at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. The next generation of sports radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Welcome back. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with our next segment, we always got to take time to pause and thank the folks that power us. So think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient. They are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. They're going to take good care of you. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. Well, right now we're going to continue our March Madness coverage. We've got a lot more to dive into, and we are thrilled to have back with us. We're going to hit on a variety of subjects. We want to get the pulse on his bracket. We also want to hit on some of the subjects in marketing and personal brands, specifically when we talk about the NCAA tournament. That is the CEO of Block 6 Analytics, I should say Professor Adam Grossman. He's got all the answers. How are you tonight?
Good. I don't know about all the answers, but we'll try to answer your question.
Okay. Well, my number one question for you is, Adam, how does your bracket look after all of those massive upsets and those buzzer beaters? Because all I can say is the Big E bracket, it is all jacked up.
Yeah, our bracket is jacked up as well. We didn't run an analytical model on this. Given my travel schedule, I didn't have as much time as I normally do. So, luckily, in the office pool, I had Duke winning the tournament, okay. So at least that still looks good. But I'm from the D.C. area originally, and I went a little heavy on UVA, which obviously looks bad in hindsight now. But, yeah, it's definitely not looking great, but there's still a chance.
Well, you know, UMBC, they pull off the biggest upset in the history of the tournament, beating top overall seed Virginia by 20. You know, talk to me, and this is one of the reasons why I extended an invitation to you tonight, Adam, is, you know, what have we learned from the tournament so far in terms of just the wacky trend? We have seen and witnessed so many exceptional programs, so many experienced teams that got beat.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple things there. One is there does appear to be more parity in college basketball before, particularly not necessarily at the top of the hierarchy, but in the middle. So, you know, it's easier than ever for people to contact athletes, for teams to contact athletes, to have a relationship with athletes. The resources for recruiting are definitely important, but there's a lot more ability through social media and other contact points to have relationship with athletes, which enables, you know, programs that aren't necessarily the top programs in terms of money spent on their basketball programs to talk to athletes. Now, the NCAA has limits on that communication, but the reason they have limits is because it's so easy for people to communicate. It's so easy for programs to communicate with athletes. The second thing is, you know, definitely from a one and done perspective, a lot of the top talent that typically would give these, you know, the Dukes or the Kentuckys of the world the ability to have that differentiation from a talent perspective is now going to the NBA, particularly from, you know, they spend 1 year in college and then end up going to the NBA. The last thing is, I think there's also a little bit of a misperception of the amount of craziness. For sure, there were a lot of upsets, and for sure, you know, UVA is definitely a notable exception. But what's been consistently found is, particularly with the NCAA tournament, as you get down the list, the number one seed is number one seeds are by far the most likely to win the tournament and have consistently been that. Number two seeds are then the second most likely. So this just kind of shows the importance of sample size. When you're only playing one game, the probability of the better team winning could still be over 90%, but 10% of the time something happening is a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So an upset could happen in one game where it won't happen. You know, if they play the game 100 times, it wouldn't happen that frequently. But that's the beauty of the NCAA tournament. That's why it's called March Madness, is you only get, you know, one game to figure out if somebody's going to win or lose. And that introduces a lot of variance in the ability for teams to win. And it shows that that's what makes it so exciting.
Hey, the CEO of Block 6 Analytics, Adam Grossman, one of our regular guests here at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, with us on this Friday night. Connect with us. We are live on Twitter at eRadio Sports, and you can always go back. Twice is nice. We have an amazing podcast page. That is podcastarena.com. Yes, check out the Big E Sports Show, but so many amazing hosts on our network and programs. So as we talk about, you know, players leaving early to go to the NBA, we certainly talked about that a lot on tonight's program. Trae Young declaring himself. He's going to make himself eligible for the NBA draft from Oklahoma, that standout player. But so many of these programs, awesome programs that, you know, lost early in the tournament this year. Is this good or is this bad for college basketball? Because I have to say, despite even, you know, some of the top teams falling and going down early, there still is a lot of really good feel-good stories, even in the upsets, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's two things there. One is that it depends on what you mean by does it impact college basketball. From a revenue perspective, by far what the NCAA makes almost all of its money from is actually the NCAA tournament. And the reason people watch the NCAA tournament is for upsets and the idea that, you know, all this craziness can happen. So if you're talking about just purely from like a monetary perspective or a revenue perspective, the more upsets there are, the better. So that actually having people leave, potentially go to the NBA to create this environment is actually something that could be arguably better for the revenue of basketball. Now, for the actual quality of the athletes and the quality of the games, that's a different probably conversation to have. And that, you know, that's part of the reason, one of the things that the NBA is exploring right now is not the one and done, but the two and done method, which is similar to what baseball does. So in baseball, you can either go to become a professional baseball player either right after high school or after you spend 3 years in college. The NFL has a similar rule where you have to be 3 years removed from high school before you can declare for the NFL draft. So the NBA is different in that it's clearly there's some players who can be ready to play in the NBA, you know, coming right out of high school. But, you know, I think from a fan's perspective and from, you know, the development of the college game perspective, the idea of having this two or three and done rule would be helpful. And it also creates an interesting opportunity for the NBA. The NBA
one of the reasons that the NBA likes college basketball so much is that people didn't necessarily know who Trae Young was last year, and now he's one of the bigger stars, became a big star in college, and that created a spotlight on him that now can be transferred into the NBA, and he becomes a more attractive rookie. The NBA has to decide, you know, they've spent a lot of time and energy into the G League. So one of the things they're exploring is, can we make the G League similar to college and now make that something that people actually want to go and see, because the top high school talent could just go straight to the G League and potentially participate there and then go to the NBA after that. If the main caveat being, can the G League generate the same amount of attention, engagement, revenue that college basketball ends up generating for the NBA? So it's definitely an interesting time and interesting questions for college basketball and for the NBA.
Okay, you're listening to The Voice, CEO of Block 6 Analytics. That is Adam Grossman. Talking about a lot of different things, marketing and personal brands. When we talk about specifically the brand of college basketball, it's been a very difficult year in terms of just all the scandals that has taken place, continuation of the FBI investigation. When I think about like a historic win, the upset like UMBC, how does that help the school? How does that help the brand with securing additional corporate sponsors? Because I would think that would energize the revenue going into that school and of course, them hitting marketing goals because it creates a whole new public awareness.
Yeah, there's two things there actually that you brought up, which I think are interesting. The first part is, you know, with the part of the reasons that the issues with agents come up and the issue with payments to players come up is because, which is well known, is that NCAA players cannot be paid for their performance except with scholarships. And then, you know, more recently, there's been adjustments or added a value that can be provided to NCAA players on top of the scholarship that some of the larger conferences can provide the NCAA players. But primarily, that's where they're able to generate, the money to help pay for their schooling. And other sport, you know, one of the things that's come up recently in a variety of different situations, either with most famously with Ed O'Bannon. So Ed O'Bannon was the famous famous forward for the UCLA basketball
team. He was just on the show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. So there you go. So you already heard it. So you hear it again. But that's exactly right. So one of the things that the NCAA is exploring, and I think should continue to explore, is the ability of players to use their likeness and images and not necessarily to be, you know, when you sign your scholarship, you agree to be essentially like a student athlete in perpetuity, where the NCAA can use your likeness and image in perpetuity without you necessarily getting compensated. And I think that's just really a fair question to ask. And that's a way, instead of, you know, colleges paying players directly, that being able to monetize their likeness and image, I think is potentially, and this is what Olympic athletes do now. People know that the Olympic athletes have different sponsorship, particularly swimmers, but all different Olympic, swimmers and gymnasts. So that's one thing I think that should be explored, just continue to be explored in the context of that conversation. The second part where you're talking about UMBC is also interesting because, you know, I think a common perception is that schools spend way too much money on sports and what's the actual return on investment for that spend. When in reality, one is that sports often serve as the biggest marketing, the most visible marketing presence for many of these schools. So that's one thing. But even just directly, the business of the schools, if you're thinking of schools as, you know, not just academic institutions, but businesses that actually have to generate revenue, is from tuition. And what the schools want to look for is, can we get more people to apply? And can we get higher quality students to apply to make it more competitive so we can potentially increase the tuition price? What has been consistently shown for schools like UMBC that have these upsets is that after an upset, applications go up, and that in particular, students with higher SAT scores also seem to apply more to those schools. So if you're talking about getting one student to apply and to come to the school that maybe wouldn't have before is a tens of thousands of dollars decision and tens of thousands of dollars impact on the school's revenue, which then allows the school to invest more in academics and scholarships for other people. So it's just been clearly shown what's called called the Flutie effect. So this happened with Boston College when Doug Flutie had that Hail Mary and was able to upset Miami. Uh-huh. But it's been shown consistently, and Wichita State has seen the benefits of that. You know, they're starting in 2012 or 2013, they've seen the benefits of that approach since then, and since the school has been consistently good, performed well in basketball. Boise State has also seen the impact of that from coming from nowhere to be a competitive football school, and it's really fundamentally changed the entire university.
Outstanding. Hey, Adam Grossman's been with us tonight, the next generation of sports radio. That is SB Nation Radio. Check him out online. He is the CEO of Block 6 Analytics. Always a true pleasure when you're on the program. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, it is Friday night. Welcome back to SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Alyssa Walker-Campbell with you. We always love to connect live on Twitter at eRadio Sports, and you can always go back and listen to our entire interview at podcastarena.com. And we always have to pause and thank all of our corporate partners and sponsors. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. As promised, it is we're going to continue our golf conversation, and we're going to be inside the ropes and delighted to have with us for the very first time former PGA pro and also from the Golf Channel's The Big Break. We remember that very popular program. He played college golf at Texas A&M, and that is Anthony Rodriguez. We are so honored to have him on the show tonight. We met Anthony, my sons and I, when we were in San Antonio last week at MK Technologies. They've been on our program before, and of course, Anthony was there, and we wanted to extend an invitation and get his thoughts on all the excitement that's going on in the PGA. Good evening, Anthony. Thank you for joining us for the first time.
Well, thank you for having me. Looking forward to this.
Well, we've got a lot to dive into. And as I said, you know, we're going to start off our conversation with some PGA news and notes. And certainly it is. You're a Texas guy, so it's a big weekend here in the Lone Star State. In Austin, the WGC Dell Technologies match play is underway with so many of the top golfers in the world. I wanted to ask you, I mean, what are your thoughts on this particular, you know, competition? And who or what has impressed you the most?
Well, you know, it's nice to have a golf tournament with match play because we don't get to see that much other than the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup. So to have these guys go at it, you know, once you reach a certain caliber on the PGA Tour, you can actually beat anybody. The number 16 guy can beat the number one guy, just like we've seen in college basketball.
Yeah.
Lately, it's just anybody's given day. You know, you've been around golf. You've seen how golf works. I mean, you have your good days and your bad days, and when you're that talented and playing on the PGA Tour any given day.
And what is your strategy in terms of when you're in this, as I said, you know, this type of competition in match play? Can you take more risk?
You know, yeah, you can take a lot more risk. I mean, Austin Country Club is a great venue for this because they have drivable par fours, reachable par fives, risk-reward. I think, like I said, it's a great venue. The golf course is in great shape from what I've seen in the past, and, you know, nowadays everybody hits it long, so, you know, it's a golf course that you drive a par four, you know, you get to pull up the driver when you really don't want to, but you got to pull it out and take that chance as well. But we saw yesterday where I think, who was it that drove the par four, and Keegan Bradley actually laid up and on 18. And was able to make a birdie just by laying up. So there's strategies involved, but there's also, you know, you play to win. And it doesn't matter if you make a three or a seven. You go to if you win with a seven, you still win the hole. You didn't make a triple. That's the great thing about match play.
Yeah. And, you know, you bring up a great point, Anthony, because the play of your opponent, I mean, I had to wonder, and I was going to talk to you about, is how much does that dictate what your next shot will be? If your opponent's not in play, then it's wise, like as you said, to play a safer shot.
Yes. You know, it's like growing up and gambling with your friends on the golf course, you know, you're playing some guy in match and you're playing $5 and $10 a hole. It's the same thing, same strategy. You know, you practice for this situation, not really knowing that you're practicing for it. You know, when you're playing $5 and $10 a hole and, you know, the guy hits it out of bounds, you're like, oh, I'll just hit an iron off the tee and make par and he's going to make five and we'll just go to the next hole. So, the strategy is everything in golf. But even when you're playing stroke play, you still have an idea what you want to do, but things change. If you go into a playoff, you know, the guy that hits first, and if he, you know, hits it in the water, hits it out of bounds, that changes your strategy, what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to, how many years ago was it when, John Vandervelde at the British Open, you know, he hit driver. Hit driver and he made a seven on the last hole to get into the playoff when all he had to do was hit an iron off the tee. But he felt confident to hit the driver and then drove it in the water and then his next shot in the water. So, you know, it's a strategy game. It really is.
Hey, former PGA Tour player Anthony Rodriguez is with us tonight for the very first time. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. Would love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And just one more quick hit on match play. You know, I would have to assume, Anthony, that, you know, it's pretty, you know, critical. You really want to get off to a fast start. You want to get up early so that you can kind of crush your opponent. And you know, you don't want to back down, right? Set the tone, set the pace.
Early, when you're up early, it's always good. But, you know, there's times where it takes you time to get comfortable and to see how your opponent's playing. And, you know, if he gets hot, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. But just sit there and go, good shot, nice putt, okay. I'm going to get my opportunity soon. It's going to come. You got to buy your time. But, you know, match play is match play, and stroke play is it's just different. The match play is everything with the crowd, you know, can get involved in match play, and, you know, it can, you know, turn, the tides can turn so quick in match play that a guy hits a bad shot or the crowd kind of gives it a ooh, and then you're like, why are they doing that?
Right.
You know, and
right.
Then the next hole, or, you know, the crowds have their favorite, and they're going to root for who they want to win.
So when you evaluate some of the current PGA Tour players, who do you think is best, Anthony? Who do you think is best at match play?
Oh, I think, you know, Dustin Johnson is tough because he hits it so far.
Right.
But I think he lost yesterday.
That is correct.
I'm not sure.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the top seeds had lost, and I just heard that this morning. I hadn't been paying attention. It usually doesn't get good till the weekend, but evidently I missed out on some good golf yesterday.
You were listening to The Voice, former PGA Tour player. That is Anthony Rodriguez joining us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We want to catch up with Anthony, find out what he is doing now, but also weigh in and give us your thoughts. I mean, 2018 has just been an absolutely incredible year on the PGA Tour. Anthony, so many dramatic finishes, and of course we think back to last weekend, Rory's big win at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, his first title win in 18 months. What an incredible weekend. I mean, to, you know, finish off St. Patrick's, you know, festivities and everything, and just the timing of that was just so beautiful. I mean, what have been those early impressions? Here we are as we wrap up the month of March.
Well, all right, is it more impressive that Rory McIlroy won or Tiger Woods has been in contention for the last 2 weeks?
There you go. Okay.
That's the question more than anything. I mean, the ratings were up. What were they, 12 times higher than they have been in 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is everybody going to remember who won the golf tournament or Tiger had a chance of winning the golf tournament? That's the thing, is that Tiger moves the bar in golf. He moves the needle, and, you know, at a stage in my life and a stage where, you know, your kids are, better Tiger plays, the more money it is for your kids when they get into golf. I mean, everybody's going to get back into golf. Sales will go back up. And just, I mean, Tiger, it is what it is, and he moves the bar. He is golf right now.
You know, when he hooked it on 16, I mean, you just had to wonder. I wonder how many folks have said, you know, they turned their TVs off. You kind of have to wonder what the ratings were, because as you're talking about, I mean, he's such a huge draw. We've seen the crowds. Viewership is up, and he's energized, and it's exciting. Here he is, 42 years of age. And then also, I mean, Phil Mickelson wins just a few weeks ago, and he's 47 years of age. And so it's cool to see the mix, you know, in terms of we've got the young 20-year-olds that are really making a strong push, and then also some of the older guys.
Yes, it really has. But, you know, the golf ball doesn't know how old you are. And that's a
good
thing.
Point, yeah.
And you know, at 47 years old and 42 years old, and they've won many, many majors, and they know how to win. And, you know, these guys, you know, Jordan Spieth, you know, he played horrible when he was paired with Tiger, when Tiger actually played well.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Johnson, who's the other one? Anyway, these kids have not seen Tiger play at his best. You know, when I was playing out there in 97 with him, and then after that, is that he had an intimidation factor. He did, and
right.
He was always playing good. And he was able to come from five behind. That when he won Pebble Beach, when he was seven down with nine to play, and Matt Gogel had the lead there, and Tiger came back and caught him. and ended up winning the golf tournament. You know, it was always that intimidation factor, looking up at the board and going, oh, crap, Tiger's, you know, is on the first page now.
Yeah.
Okay, don't mess up, don't mess up. And then all of a sudden, the person ends up missing up. So, you know, these kids don't know how good he was, and to have that intimidation. Now, you know, one thing that he did do is teach these kids to win. They saw how good he was, so he moved the bar up. You know, Davis Love, when Tiger first came up, Davis Love won that year. Mm-hmm. I think he won the PGA that year. But he said he gave a lot of kudos to Tiger because he moved the bar, and he made him practice harder. He made him start exercising and working out and doing the things that are different. Back then, before Tiger came out and played, and Tiger was the one who actually brought exercise into the golf. It's okay to have muscles and play golf. It's okay to go to bed at 9 o'clock and not sit at a bar till midnight when you have a 7 a.m. Uh-huh. tea time. Yeah, but going back to this is that, you know, Tiger is golf, and you know, just like Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer in their day were, and Chichi Rodriguez was, and Lee Trevino were your Latin fans,
you
and
bet.
You know, the thing is, Tiger has the flair. He has the flamboyant. When, you know, going from his fist pump, you know, people miss that, and they want to see that. They want to hear the yell. They want to hear, come on, you know.
Yeah.
And they want to hear that, you know. And that's one thing that these kids don't get, because they're all business out there, and they're playing for so much money, and they don't think that you're supposed to, you know, you can't smile on a good shot. You can't, you know, get upset when you hit a bad shot. They have a steel face, and you know, and just wearing sunglasses, and you know, and thank you, and just raise, you know, tip of the hat or raise their hand or anything. But there's no excitement anymore. And Tiger brought that to the game.
Mm-hmm. It's so exciting to have him back. I cannot believe our time is flying by, and we are going one on one with Anthony Rodriguez, former PGA Tour player, Big Break alum, and one of the things we wanted to talk to you about. All of our fans of yours here in the state of Texas, we certainly remember you from that very popular program. Being a competitor on that, what was the best part of that experience, Anthony?
Well, obviously wasn't the first one, because in 2007 I got I was the villain of the Big Break.
Okay.
And, you know, if you're talking to me now, that's not really me.
Okay, cool.
You know, you get put in a situation, you get 12 guys, you know, all staying together and bickering, and you know, all of a sudden some, you know, guys are taking sides, and you know, it was almost like. Getting ganged up on, to be honest. When I missed that two footer to get eliminated, mm-hmm. it haunted me. I'm not gonna lie, it haunted me for about a year and a half.
Really?
And yes, it did. So when I got asked to come back and do the reunion show, I you know, I thought really hard about it, but I went ahead and did it, and this time I knew how to play the game, and went back and approved myself and ended up being MVP.
We are inside the ropes with Anthony Rodriguez, former PGA Tour player. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Yes, March Madness, it is underway. We've always got to take time to tee it up, and we are going one-on-one with Anthony Rodriguez, former PGA Tour player. How is that experience different than competing in, like, an amateur or a professional tournament?
You know, it's not really golf, because you're doing more challenges and you're hitting shots. And the tough thing is that when people watch it, they don't understand what goes on behind the scenes, because you're mic'd up, you have a wire going down your back, and you have a boom camera in your face right there when you hit the shot. You got four other cameras all around, and you draw numbers to hit the shot. So say you're 165 yards and you got to hit in a circle, and they'll tell you, okay, we're going to go on the driving range and practice your 150 to 170 shot. So you just kind of hit shots, and then you draw numbers. So if you're one, you're good, but if you end up being that 12th guy, it's going to take 2.5 hours before you can ever hit your shot. Because they take a break, they got to reset up, they got to do all this, and you don't get to warm up again. So you've got one ball, one shot, waiting 2.5 hours and you got to pull it off. That's a hard thing that nobody realized what goes on out there.
How intense is that pressure to be able to hit those shots, as you're saying, because it's not fluid. It's not like you're playing a round of golf.
No, exactly. And, you know, when I went back for the second time when I was practicing for it, I would do that. I'd get hit. I'd hit, you know, practice my 8-iron. And I'm hitting 160 yards and hitting a shot. And then I'd wait 10, 15 minutes, and I'd come back and try to pull off the shot. So that's how I prepared myself. So mentally, I was really prepared for it. And in the first one, when they were going over the rules with us, they said, if you're in the top 2 points, you'll never have to go through elimination. Well, they threw a curveball at me, and I was always in the top two. And we had to pick teams, and we had, I think it was like 4-4 or something like that, or 5-5, however it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And the losing team had to go through elimination. Well, I let my emotions get the best of me there, because that's exactly what happened there. I was like, wait a second, you said that this, you know, they changed the rules to what happened. And I got really upset, and, you know, that had a lot to do with what happened. I was just, my emotions got the best of me. Just like, it looks like when you're playing golf, the same way. That happens.
Hey, former PGA, we're wrapping up
ahead.
Our time.
Okay.
Former PGA Tour player Anthony Rodriguez has been with us, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. And Anthony, I know our listeners, they wonder, you know, what are you doing now? You had a terrific career at Texas A&M. Kind of give us a quick update.
Okay. I've taken 5 years off, and now I'm back playing golf again, and 45 years old and getting ready for the senior tour. I got 5 years for that.
Nice.
So I'm here in Victoria, Texas, playing that APT Tour event down here, and then from here going down to Latin America, finishing off the year.
Awesome. Well, listen, have a great round, and thank you so much for carving out some time. I know your schedule is always very intense, and we sincerely appreciate it. Thank you so much, Anthony, and good luck, okay?
Thank you so much.